We continue now with Gloria DiGaetano. She is the co-author of Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, a call to action against TV, movie, and video game violence. It's a book co-written with Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, retired formerly of the United States Army. Gloria, welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, in our last segment, there was we were talking about kids and how they watch so much TV. And one thing we didn't really get into is the fact that, you know, when they play in the past, it was very imaginative. And with today, with certain kids, it's still very imaginative. But with a lot of kids who've grown up on a lot of TV, maybe TV babysitter, you know, for many hours, their game playing is more like replicating what they're seeing on TV at the expense of their developing brains, at the expense of their imagination. Tell us about that.
Oh, exactly. And teachers see this all the time. The teachers I work with, preschool educators to primary teachers, see children's play changing into more imitative play, where the child no longer now just takes something from television and then incorporates it into a play scenario where the child would take something from real life or the grocery store clerk would be in with a television program character. Now it's the exact script of what the television is, and even children who want to deviate from the script and become more imaginative get ostracized by their peer group. No, you have to do it this way. This kind of play, this imitative play, is really socially harmful to children, because when early childhood development experts say play is a serious business of childhood, what they meant was that the children were learning social rules and social constructs that were in the normal world. And now what they're learning is deviancy, because they're imitating a constructed social universe by a media conglomerate who doesn't really care about their developmental needs. And instead, we want to see generative play. And what I help parents try to understand is, let's say you read a book to a child, the child can start role-playing the characters from that book so that they can incorporate those characters in their play, not just violent characters or the characters even that are nonviolent, but still it's on television. They need to generate their own characters, their own codes, their own language.
And we'll get more into some of the solutions as we get to the end of this segment. But in our last segment, we talked about how media violence desensitizes children to violence, and you call it AVIDS.
Yes, it's acquired violence immune deficiency, so that we know what acquired immune deficiency is in terms of the AIDS virus. What we set out in the book to do is to show that an early diet of television and film violence then creates an immune deficiency in the child, where the child is now much more vulnerable to want the violent video game or the ultra-violent horror of these video games as a source of pleasure and satisfaction, instead of being repulsed and going to a sports game, as would be the normal reaction for a normal 10 and 11 and 12-year-old. And I am saying this, and people sometimes look at me like, what are you saying? But I am saying that we are in a very huge crisis in our country. We don't know anymore what's normal and what isn't normal for our children. And when we see these hundreds of children around the country who want to imitate Columbine, who want to create the same scenario, who are serious about this, we have to stop and take a look at what kind of society we are offering these children, because these children that are saying that are mentally not well. They are deviant. They are abnormal. And 10 years ago, we would have been outraged, but we aren't anymore.
You're getting a lot more outraged than you were on the last time you were on the show. It's amazing.
I know, because I'm seeing the harvest of it, Paul. I predicted in 1985 we would see massacres by children at age 11 and 12. I didn't know they would be in the schools, but I predicted it in front of these teachers, and you could call these teachers and they would tell you that they had no idea until they came to my workshop and saw the relationship between media violence and violent behavior. They weren't thinking about it. And so it's with a very heavy heart that I'm here today, because it took the school massacres to even get this book published.
Oh, my God. Well, violent TV and movies are one part of the 1-2 punch of violence in our society, no pun intended. Yeah. Violent video games then, according to your theory, take that desensitized child and prepare them to be trained killers. The best example would be the story of Michael Carneal, the young man responsible for the high school shooting in Paducah, Kentucky. You know, it used to be the high school shooting. Now we have to be specific.
That's right.
Because there's so many going on.
That's right.
But it's a very interesting story what happened with Michael. Never shot a gun until he went into that school. Tell us that story.
Well, now there's some dispute. You know, he shot a rifle, but he never had shot a handgun, according to Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, who testified at Michael Carneal's court case as an expert witness. And so Dave Grossman knows what's going on there. And basically, he fired in this prayer group, Michael Carneal, and he fired 8 times and it hit 8 people, 5 headshots and 3 upper torso. And when that kind of statistic is given to the FBI or military strategists, they say that's just remarkable accuracy.
Yeah, and also that video game practice, the hours and hours of video game practice, like the kids in Colorado who, you know, systematically, one shot here, one shot there, rather than a typical shooting
right.
where you shoot at someone until they go down.
Exactly. And in our book on the video game chapter, we talk about that. You know, the fact, first of all, that they have a lot of practice, obviously, or they couldn't be that accurate. They're not getting that kind of practice with real guns. They are shooting thousands of times for just nickels and quarters at arcades, mostly quarters, but you can get hundreds of shots with one quarter because they get better and better at it. Many video arcade games give extra bonus points for headshots. So he was aiming for the head. And that in itself, and then you know, Dave Grossman has taught people to kill. He is a military tactician. He understands, like, how, for instance, the Jonesboro kids got the people in a kill zone area. They gathered the people together. They are doing the kinds of bombing and the kinds of weaponry. They're filled with weapons, and they come in and open fire in a rampage style that doesn't have a precedent in terms of role models in their real life. The only place they get that kind of role modeling is through violent media.
Yeah. These video games are incredibly similar to the simulators that the Army uses to train professional killers, soldiers.
They're the same. I mean, Nintendo uses the very same kinds of Nintendo-like games are used by the Army. The Marines use a form of Doom to teach some certain skills and subset of skills because what wants to be taught is to take away. See, the point of our book is that people don't normally naturally kill. You have to take away that inhibition to want to kill, first of all, and also then to be able to do that. It's a very big inhibition in the human being. And so by practicing with the targets that look more and more real, as a matter of fact, with some of these games, you can morph pictures of people you don't like and shoot them. And Eric Harris, I guess, evidently did that with Doom or had his neighborhood set up in the Doom game. So the child gets more and more, again, seeing the killing as an acceptable way because you are really imprinting it within the central nervous system. It's going right in. And the next step, of course, is virtual reality games that will even be more real. But these violent video games are should not be marketed to children, and we should have definite age boundaries about who and who cannot be in these video arcades.
Same as pornographers. I mean, it's the exact same thing.
That's right. And pornographers never said they had a right to sell to children. You know, they don't claim that right, and they take their boundary that we have established for them. And the video game industry is going to fight this tooth and nail, but we have to get a boundary here.
Yeah. I want to cover more on the video games because as the addiction goes up, you need a higher dose, and the video game manufacturers contribute that with some very, very sick things coming out now. Can you describe some of the games and some of the ads coming out? I did at the beginning of our segment.
Right, but some of these ads are just beyond any level of civility. I mean, you know, blowing up, more fun than shooting your neighbor's cat is one. But psychiatrists tell us it's important to feel something when you kill, and that's one. tongue-in-cheek idea that now the children need to feel something. And so they're even bragging about the fact that the child gets a physiological reaction. So they can't deny the research in our book because they brag about it in their ads. Very sick. The killer in you, you know, the killer in me is just coming out, or you're gonna die. And there's a, and in that particular image on that page, we don't have the picture in our book, but on the in the gaming magazine, there's a whole bunch of people against a wall being shot at. And if we go, if parents go in any grocery store, pick up these gaming magazines and thumb through them. That's what I say. Because they aren't getting any better. They're constantly going to have to escalate. And that's where do we draw the line as a civilized society? What do we want for our children?
We're talking with Gloria DiGaetano, the co-author of Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, A Call to Action Against TV, Movie, and Video Game Violence. I'm Paul Nelson. Well, there's obviously a need that these violent video games fill in youth. And studies you quote in the book suggest that the young men who play a lot of these video games, there's obviously self-esteem issues and control issues. They feel like they're out of control, and this gives them some sense of control. Maybe you can elaborate on that.
Several studies indicate that boys and girls who play video games, violent ones, are kids who are without a sense of place, without a sense of self-worth, without a sense of being connected to something bigger than themselves. These children are usually alienated at some level, or they feel alienated from their peers or from their family members. However, we have to understand too that a lot of the attraction of the violent video games is peer-induced pressure because of the media conglomerate selling it to the kids and making it seem cool. The child who doesn't play violent video games then, especially at the junior high level and early teen level, is ostracized from the peer group. So even if they didn't want to play, they get involved in it because it becomes the source of the social interaction for the birthday party, for the slumber party, for spending time with a friend.
That's like all the people in the office talking about the latest Seinfeld episode, and the one person mm-hmm. who doesn't watch TV feeling like they don't feel like they're part of it because they don't watch TV, don't know what they're talking about. What is Bubble Boy? I don't know what that is.
They're not part of it. And yeah. Anthropologists talk about there's two kinds of death, Paul. There's physical death and there's social death. And believe it or not, there are instances where people in tribal cultures, for instance, will one woman, this was in Colin Turnbull's book called The Mountain People. One woman knew she was starving. Her people, the mountain people, were starving, and she went and took her sons to another village, lived there for 2 years, but it wasn't where she belonged. She came back to her mountain people knowing she and her sons would starve to death. She chose a physical death rather than a social death. And our children are experiencing in many ways this kind of decision. They don't want to experience a social death. And until we as a society give our kids more to do, like what you do with the poetry and the youth, is so commendable because there's meaning, there's creativity, there is intellectual stimulation, there are ideas, and our children are so hungry for that.
It's very interesting because in all the funding attempts, you know, we've gotten a lot of funding so far, and we appreciate that, but many times we'll apply for grants saying that we're doing, you know, positive youth development, and from a less holistic perspective, we say we're doing teen crime prevention, mm-hmm. just to get the point across. And, you know, the arts organizations say they won't fund social services. The social services organizations say they won't fund arts, and we're trying to work on a deeper level. And yet, that was my next question on the list: is that literacy is one way to prevent violent behavior?
Yes, and it is becoming more and more clear that the relationship between language development and thinking development are intertwined in the brain. I quote some very interesting experts, Bruce Perry, for instance, who talks about the fact that violence levels were very high in Europe until the printing press, until people got more cognition and literacy, and it actually can civilize people. We see this all the time with children who are out of control or who are behavior problems. When they start learning to read, when they start getting into the symbolic systems of language and create language themselves, they settle down. There is a relationship. The prefrontal lobe, the most sophisticated part of the brain that's behind our foreheads, that's the part of the brain that acts as a switch, a turnoff switch to impulsive or potentially aggressive behavior in the normal brain.
That's very interesting, because we had a guest on the show recently who was talking about literacy and how the advent of alphabetic literacy actually creates a left hemispheric hypertrophy that leads to patriarchy and to the decline of feminine values, because it's not image-based. It's very linear, the left brain.
Well, that's not really true, because when every time you read a book, you make up images in your own head. So I would say that a symbolic system of thought is both masculine and feminine in that way, because as you are reading, you are using the metaphoric muscles in your brain. My background is in psycholinguistics. That's where my advanced degree is, and I understand language. And I understand people are saying it's patriarchy because we don't have the visual image, but we can interpret also the visual images of the feminine, of the media conglomerate through language, and see there, and then you have both. You have the marriage between the feminine and the masculine, and then you're going to have the kind of brain that will work in both worlds.
It's very interesting, because one of the questions I wanted to get to, and I don't think I'm going to have time for, is the notion of these violent video games and how violence against women is an integral part of these violent video games, and that's something that people can get from the book. And going back to the notion of solutions, and God, I hate that word, because solution implies that we know where it needs to go, and really don't. We need to create a process that brings all the shareholders, all the stakeholders to the same table and get something done about it. But a couple of interesting things you talk about in the book regarding legislative solutions is a tax on violent media suggested here in Washington State. Tell us about that and other proposals.
Yeah, well, we proposed it, obviously, and Mothers Against Violence in America and several other organizations were behind that. But
you proposed this?
Well, Mothers Against Violence in America and a variety of different organizations, and I was on a task force.
See, I thought it was some legislator's great idea, but it was your idea.
Oh, well, I don't know if it was exactly my idea, but I know Dave Grossman and I have talked about that in different places. It's cropping up around the country that just, it's a sin tax is what Grossman calls it, just like we tax cigarettes and we tax booze. Well, we need to be taxing these video games, especially the violent video games that are going to be harming our children. And they need to pay, because our kids are going to have a lot of mental health problems that will have to get funded somehow. So other solutions we talk about are more grassroots, both in the home and in the community. So we talk about email campaigns, or people just getting together and just having fun and emailing, for instance, Como, who is a kid-oriented station. During the Seahawks game, Monday Night Football, when the Seahawks were on, they put a trailer in for a film called The Bone Collector, which is very violent. Now, there were thousands of children in the Puget Sound area watching that game with their parents, probably 7-year-old kids, maybe younger, watching that game, and now these violent, horrific images come up with The Bone Collector. We need to call Kim Burks. Call Kim Burks at Como. She's the only producer I know there. She had me on her show, but ask who is the producer of Monday Night Football there. Why did they put that R-rated trailer on with a family night television? That kind of thing has to stop, and we have to educate. In a sense, we have to educate these people because they are unaware. Now, maybe they had no control over it. Maybe it was from the National ABC. But we have to start pointing out these things. Same thing with the airport CNN thing.
Yeah.
Should not have been on there.
Yeah. I mean, these kids were experiencing a nice, safe, beautiful football game where grown men were
right. All this violence.
Smashing into
violence,
each other's
violence that's structured And violence that has some cathartic effect, hopefully. But you see the horrific images of bones and somebody dangling, and you know that they're collecting bodies for their bones and so forth.
Oh, when you said body parts dangling, I have this flash of Joe Theismann after Lawrence Taylor hit him on Monday Night Football, and then his leg dangling. And then the violent slow motion replay of the bones crunching over and over and over.
Yeah,
I don't watch much football either. Every now and then I'll put it
right.
In.
I don't either, but that I saw.
You know, we're just about out of time. President Clinton was saying we need words, not weapons, and he was saying that right after Columbine as he was ordering NATO bombing raids. I mean, isn't there some culpability for the cultural violence for our leaders who still believe that violence is a solution to problems?
Obviously it is, and I don't know, as parents we're so overwhelmed and so tired, we can't deal with the theoretical, the philosophical issues. What I say is that we have to protect our children and educate them. As long as possible, protect them from the images that will create nightmares, that will desensitize them. Don't make violence glamorous. Talk about how it's harmful. Decide what's sensational and gratuitous and talk about that. Decide what kinds of sensitive images of violence we can give our children through quality videos, good movies, when they're ready for that. Make sure they've developed habits of mind, that they read, they think, and what I tried to instill with my sons, they're more creative and they're more critical and they're more intelligent than anything that they see over television.
Right on.
Yeah.
They're growing smart brains, aren't they?
That's what we want. And a smart brain will lead to a great heart.
Can you tell us maybe in 30 seconds or so about Grow Smart Brains and give us a website and phone number?
Sure. My website is www.growsmartbrains.com. GrowSmartBrains.com. And any viewer who wants to email me and who had listened to this show, tell me you've listened to this show, and I'll send you a book. And keep in touch, because I'll have a monthly magazine that will be free, and you can get some ideas every month about raising children optimally in this media age.
Is that also safe for or available to people who call up the phone number?
Yes, they can call at 206-654-2994, and that might be easier, and just say you heard me on Paul's show, and I'll send you a book, the first 10 people who contact me.
Excellent. And Grow Smart Brains, you are a nonprofit organization available for lectures, that kind of thing?
GrowSmartBrains.com is right now my consulting business, and I'm creating a nonprofit foundation. I do have a variety of things, of different articles, kinds of articles that parents and teachers can use and disseminate how they see fit to try and get this information out to the general public.
More power to you. I'm just really impressed with your work and the level of urgency that has increased since the last time. I find it really gratifying, and I hope that I hope someone's listening.
Thank you, Paul.
Gloria DiGaetano is our guest. She's been our guest. She is the co-author of Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, A Call to Action Against TV, Movie, and Video Game Violence. Every January, America stops what it is doing to watch a football game that almost never lives up to the hype. This year, why not take a pass on the pigskin and check out the third annual Super Bowl of Poetry, presented by the Northwest Spoken Word Lab in Auburn, Washington. The event will feature a workshop Saturday, January 29th from 2 to 5 p.m. called The Current State of Poetry, with a performance and writing workshop hosted by Jack and Adele Foley of Oakland, California. On Super Bowl Sunday, January 30th, Jack and Adele will highlight a roundtable discussion on poetry and a reading, also from 2 to 5 p.m., along with Oregon poet Sharon Dubiago, Robin Schultz, and Nico Vasilakis of Seattle. More information is available at www.splab.org. The event is made possible in part by the King County Arts Commission and the Washington State Commission for the Humanities. The third annual Super Bowl of Poetry on January 29th and 30th at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab. Another village building project of It Plays in Peoria Productions. This program is made possible in part by a contribution from Marlene's Market and Deli in Federal Way and Tacoma, Washington. Full-service health food stores with all-natural restaurants, all-organic produce departments, and happy customers since 1976. Marlene's Market and Deli, off I-5 in Federal Way and Tacoma, Washington. Open 7 days a week. For more on the guests of this show, the titles of their books or names of their organizations, for links to their websites, or for other times and places to hear these programs, check out the website for It Plays in Peoria Productions at www.inpeoria.org. That's INPEORIA.ORG. Once there, you'll find current show summaries, contact information, and even summaries of past programs for the purpose of ordering tapes. You can also find a link to the SPLAB, the Northwest Spoken Word Lab, an intergenerational spoken word performance, resource, and outreach center, a project under the nonprofit umbrella of It Plays in Peoria. The SPLAB is where the holistic concepts discussed on this show are implemented in a community setting. So check out what we're up to at www.inpeoria.org, just like the town in Illinois. That's INPEORIA.ORG. Another village building project of It Plays in Peoria Productions. Well, that is our program for this week. For more information on underwriters or guests of this show, check out our website at www.inpeoria.org. That's INPEORIA.ORG. Click on P for programming information, U for underwriters. They help keep the show on the air along with your tax-deductible contributions. Please consider making a donation or buying a tape of today's show. Tapes are $10. Send a check with the show's subject matter and date to IPIPP, 14 South Division, Auburn, Washington, USA, 98001. Or call us toll-free at 888-735-MEET or at 253-735-6328. Website hosting is made available by the Speakeasy Cafe, providing public access email accounts and the website host to Seattle-based cultural institutions such as the Symphony and Pacific Northwest Ballet. Speakeasy.org. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and do not represent this network, station, or the show's underwriters. The show is produced by It Plays in Peoria Productions, a nonprofit 501c3 organism dedicated to creating awareness of holistic philosophies and practices through spoken, written, and electronic communication, and to the implementation of such in the Puget Sound region. I'm Paul Nelson. Until next time, please remember the words of Diane DePrima. The only war that matters is the war against the